Department is down in Belize today. This music is coming to you by way of Belize. This is the Garifuna Collective and Black Cat Bird right here at WFERLP, South Royalton, Vermont. This is Green Zine, your Thursday environmental news magazine. We've got Henry live in the studio, a rare treat for me. My name's Todd, and we'll be bringing you all kinds of information and an interview guest in about a half hour from now. We do want to acknowledge our underwriters here on Green Zine, and they include the White River Land Collaborative. They have a lot of things planned for this summer, and when you hear about something that's happening on their land, it's easy to get there. You just travel north on 110 here from South Royalton and look for the first covered bridge on the right. Go through the bridge and you're there. Also, Solar Fest, not doing their festival this year as they work on the grounds. They'll have some other events, but their full-blown festival coming back to Brandon, Vermont at their new location in 2025. Also, First Branch Coffee Company, thank you, Lauren, for renewing your underwriting support. The Upper Pass Beer Company, you can find their four packs at many places, and you can get their beer on draft at Carlita's Cantina, at least 10 drafts there. Someone I had a little back and forth with this morning, Daniel Leibowitz, longtime supporter of the radio station. Bale also renewing their underwriting support recently. Find out more about them at balevt.org. Tom Wells and Royal Trail Works. Royal Trail Works making some trails down to New York for the Rolling Stones tonight. Go for it. And finally, the Moving Solar Company. They track the sun. Solaflect down in Norwich. Well, we're already hanging out with the birds this morning, Henry.
I like that.
Yeah, I thought you might like that. Yeah, that's a really great group that actually isn't together anymore, but they put out some great music in their time, and of course, a good reason to play. You know, I had a little encounter with a cat bird the other day, and you know what I did? This is something that I'm not too used to, although I think I did it this morning, yeah. I got out my Merlin app, held it up, and I could actually see the bird. It was out in a bush, and it was gray, and I thought, you know, I think that really is a cat bird. And Merlin told me it was a cat bird, but then it did throw in brown thrasher.
Right.
And I'm not sure there was a brown thrasher in the area. I think it was kind of toggling back and forth as to which one, but it was a catbird.
Yep. And that frequently happens with Merlin. You'll sometimes get a second bird that probably isn't there.
Mystery bird.
Well, a bird that sounds almost identical. And catbirds have multiple voices. So in this BirdNet clip, you'll hear the catbird sound at first, and then if you pay attention when he's sort of signing off, you get a whole bunch of other songs the catbird is doing as well.
Now, is one of those species, either catbird or brown thrasher, are they more likely to be spotted and heard in Vermont, or are they kind of equal distribution for our area? Do you know the answer to that?
I think it's a habitat thing. I think the brown thrashers are more of a deciduous wood dweller, and the catbird are mostly seeking out things on the ground and low shrubs. And I picked this out. This is actually from BirdNote from some 15 years ago or so.
No, 2013, at Bastille Day.
There we are.
Yeah, July 14th, 2013.
Sorry,
so 11 years ago.
Only 11 years. But I picked it out because I have a pair of catbirds that frequent picking up things off the ground under Jane's bird feeders. She's in an urban enough area so the bears don't come and get her bird seed.
Yeah.
And like everything else in spring plumage, they're just very elegant and beautiful, as well as having a nice song.
Well, before we jump into the rest of our index today, since we're talking about birds, why don't we go to this bird note piece first, and then we'll talk about our guest and some other things as we get ready to bring you Green Zine here on Free Vermont Radio. From Bird Note, this is called Sitting in the Catbird Seat.
This is Bird Note.
This is the old redhead, Red Bob. All set for another big baseball game at Brooklyn? Well, that's fine.
Longtime Brooklyn Dodger and then later New York Yankee announcer Red Barber often described a player in a winning situation as sitting in the catbird seat. So what is sitting in the catbird seat? And what, for that matter, is a catbird? Well, the catbird part is easy. It's a cousin of the mockingbird in the bird family known as the mimids. And it does sound a little like a cat. But where did that phrase come from? It's been around since the 19th century, probably originating in the South, where there are lots of catbirds. The gray catbird is normally a skulker, foraging near the ground. But during breeding season, when it's protecting its territory, the catbird is likely to pick fights with others of its species. As part of the competition, the two combatants sing their way to higher and higher perches. The one who finally takes the highest perch is, well, sitting in the catbird seat, with the best view, in control, top bird, so to speak. So take it from the old redhead. The catbird seat is the place to be. I'm Frank Corrado.
Well, I'm going to stick with that baseball theme for a moment. I really enjoyed that. I do remember Red Barber, and he might have been announcing when you were still down there in the New York area, although maybe you weren't listening to the Yankees. So here is a catbird seat situation in baseball, Henry. You're the batter. It's the bottom of the ninth. The game is tied, and the bases are full. Yeah, I'll bring you up there. And the pitcher, it's a full count. And the batter knows that that guy has to throw the ball across the plate or he will walk in the winning run. That's being in the catbird seat in baseball.
Yes. That's on the hot seat for the pitcher.
Oh, the pitcher, boy, because, hey, if he strikes him out and they end up winning the game in extra innings, but if he gets any kind of a single and the game, or he walks him, that would be the worst thing.
Right.
Walk off, lose the game, walk the run in. Anyway, I did enjoy that. And skulking. Wow, skulking around on the ground. Haven't heard that word in a while.
No. Dates us, I guess.
Yeah. Oh, it's a good word. I'm gonna break it out in the next Scrabble game. Two Ks in skulking.
Yeah. So we have a pretty full schedule today in the program. We're going to cover some of the news. I'm thinking maybe this should be a new little insert that we just do a quick touch base with some of the climate news that's happening in the week, and then I'll go on to the second of the presentations that I'm attending, the conference from Bionutrients. Bionutrients,
yep.
There we are.
Got it.
And so very interesting stuff happening there in that conference. And then we have a guest, which is Griffin Sinclair Wingate, who is with A Summer of Heat, and it's a direct action activity to starve big oil of money. So we'll do a short interview with him rather than a long one, and it'll be a little later in the program. And then on we have more things that we can tease you with action you can take take, either becoming active in the climate cabinet, and we'll hear little Volts lead into that. You may want to listen to those. And all of these links that we're doing quick dips into are going to be up on our notes.
Yeah, and those are easily found at our website, royaltonradio.org or WFVR.org, and you just click on that green zine notes and you're there. Hey, I'm going to go back. You're mentioning giving people some information about taking action. Our really wasn't a guest, although, boy, if you can get Catherine Hayhoe in the studio, that would be great, Henry. But we did hear her on tape, and she was very very informative and also very entertaining. I felt like I said last week, I want to go back to college and take a class with her. But she was emphasizing the importance of taking action, even minimal action, in a way of kind of keeping your psyche in a positive, in an optimistic mode during what really seems, and we're going to delve into some stories that aren't quite gloom and doom, but how you can just be overwhelmed with the number of feedback loops and negative things that are happening with climate. But if you're out there doing something, no matter how small, you'll feel like you're more part of the solution than part of the problem.
Yes, I think if I weren't able to take any action, I would be very depressed by that activity.
Yeah.
You know, just by learning as much as I know and not feeling I can do anything about it. And it's tough, because even if you know a lot, you just don't know if the human race will wake up and do enough. But if we individually do things, that makes us feel better, and it rubs off on other people. And I think talking to other people, not about what they are doing or aren't doing, but just asking them kind of where they're at, what they think is going on. Do they have any things that they feel they can feel good about? That's, you know, that works as a way of getting more people on board.
Yep.
And kind of round out where the show is going to at the end, with that climate cabinet, it's the actions that are really changing, getting off fossil fuel. Yes, the federal government plays a role, but it's not the big player. The big player is the people who make local decisions about what you do about being good to the environment. And it's really nature. It's unleashing nature is our biggest, to me, the biggest way of, that's what's going to fix things over the long haul.
Right.
And it has an immediate short-term effect as well.
So I'm just going to give a couple of examples, and these are based on things that are happening or could happen in towns around here. One of them is that if you're a select board, so that's getting pretty close to the citizenry, and you can have a lot of influence on your select board, if they're considering investing in some renewable energy that will power parts of the town and set aside some funds, or at least get a grant writer to try to apply for some funds. That's something that people at the grassroots level can really get involved with, either supporting a decision like that, maybe joining the planning commission and urging, looking at the town plan, looking at where potential phase three power is, if you're trying to tie in there with a larger array. Another example could be that, let's say you've got a big town forest or areas that are up for sort of what's the next plan for the town forest. Maybe there's still some old growth there. Do we really need to cut as many trees as we have in the past? Another thing that if you were on your town forest committee and participating in their negotiations with the county forester and with the select board, you could make an impact there. So there's just a couple of examples where you don't really even have to go very far to talk to people, decision makers that are not down in Washington and maybe not even up there in Montpelier.
Yeah. So let me just tick off some of these news items. The Biden administration got together with the Democrats, and they have sent a portfolio of information from their investigation of Big Oil, which is pretty damning that Big Oil knew that they were doing climate change and that they decided they would put profit over that and go with clouding the message, confusing it, and staying in business just as long as they could. And they've turned that over to the Department of Justice. And, you know, if Trump isn't elected, I think if Trump's elected, he will squash it and not allow the Department of Justice to do a follow-up. But if a follow-up's there, it's really very, very parallel to the Big Tobacco campaign. So there's a link to look at that if you want to see more on that. The Biden also administration has now put out the rules and has turned over availability of money to grid operators to rebuild the grid. And eventually, or not eventually, it'll take time to rebuild the grid. And the reason you want to rebuild the grid is to have more sustainable energy on the grid. The demand for electricity is going up as we shift both heating in Vermont and cooling to heat pumps and to electric cars. Those make double households or triple a household's usage if they're adopting all of those technologies, and not everyone will do that. So it doesn't, it's only upgrading it, but it also makes us more efficient. So we're releasing less, we're actually using less energy to get those same work done. And so while the grid is being upgraded, which is many utilities across the country don't want to do that,
and particularly in Texas.
Yeah. Well, Texas has probably would like to have some people in Texas want. Texas is the biggest wind producer in the country.
And that come on quick with that.
And they can't use that all locally. They need a grid connection to ship some of that power
right.
2, 3, 4 states away.
Because they've kind of been an insular utility, just kind of within Texas is where the power stays.
Yes.
So maybe that's a bipartisan thing that could happen in Texas. Let's get connected to other states.
And that's true of the grid all the way across the country. There are pockets of grid operators, and they don't talk to each other, and they don't collaborate with each other. And this money requires them to do that. So, and then while we're waiting for that grid to come on, there's very interesting material on new means of storing energy temporarily so as to make up for solar panels working in the afternoon, but air conditioning coming on in the evening and making more of a demand than the solar panels are producing. And that kind of battery makes a big difference in the cost of electricity.
Yeah.
And there's gravity and iron and heat batteries, all of note. Fascinating things to chase if you want to get into the the technological
Can you
side
just
of
take
it.
One of those and not a long dissertation?
Okay,
but
well,
how does gravity? How does that help?
So
with
a gravity
the storage?
Battery. So what you do is there are two different kinds of gravity batteries. One now exists in Northfield, Mass. There is a top of a mountain that has a lake in it, and they pump water out of the Connecticut River up to the to that lake and fill that lake. And when they want to draw electricity, they let water down that and run turbines to generate electricity. So it's water going up and down depending upon whether there's surplus power. And that was originally installed because Vermont Yankee was, and the other power plants, it wasn't just Vermont Yankee, it was the other New England power plants, were continuously generating electricity night and day, and they didn't have any use for it in the nighttime. So they pumped water with it, and then they used the electricity when they had demand.
Huh.
But it's
that's like
there.
The first positive thing I've ever heard that Vermont Yankee was involved in.
I didn't think it was the grid people had to do it.
Okay, we won't give it.
So, so that's one kind of battery, and you can do it with weights and towers, and do the exact same thing with dry material, because there aren't many places you have a mountain to put a lake on and a big body of water like the Connecticut River at the foot of it.
I think the key to this, and this could even happen in your own personal household, for instance, living off-grid, our washing machine, which we don't use all that much, but we use when we need to, we only do wash when it's a really bright sunny day, when we're getting more power than the panels than we can store in our batteries. That's a good time. So pumping that water up to the lake, the time to run those pumps is when it's a really bright sunny day. And then, as you said, maybe when there's a demand at 4 o'clock for air conditioning, or the wind's not blowing and the sun's not out, you've got this backup battery, gravity battery.
Yeah. So when you have a heat pump in your house and you're cooling with it, you want to cool all day long and have the house be cool coming into the evening. And you can actually shut it off during the highest power demand. And we have to make the grid give us messages and tell us that hey, please cut back your power, or here we will give you a lower rate on your power if you allow us to have some control over how much demand you're making.
So another quick example of that is with EV charging, and I finally delved into my EV a little bit longer, where there's a timer, and I checked with Green Mountain Power to see when their lowest rates are, which are overnight, and I don't charge at home very often, because remember, people who live in this area, there is free level 2 charging here at the Vermont Law and Graduate School. They wouldn't mind me telling you that.
No.
I don't think so. In honor of our friend Kevin. So you could get in your vehicle, plug it in, let's say 2 o'clock in the afternoon, I'm not going to use it anymore, but I don't want to be getting power right now. Set the timer on the clock to run. Let's say you want to run it all during that down period when it's the cheapest. 9 o'clock, charger turns on automatically. 7 in the morning, it turns off automatically. And you have saved yourself money, and you've not overburdened the grid during a time when you didn't need to.
And Green Mountain Power probably sells that power cheap at night because it's getting so much of its power from Hydro-Quebec, and there isn't as much demand as there is power availability.
Yeah.
And when solar gets to be more dominant in the state than it is now, then the cheapest rates will probably happen in the middle of the afternoon.
Oh, interesting. Huh. So we'll see that transition, hopefully in our lifetime, Henry.
Yes. So let's jump on to the bio-nutrient conference that I went to. And this session was about, really, I summed it up. It was 2 hours of session, but I summed it up. Omega-3 and omega-6 fatty acids. And what we are is what we eat, and what that animal ate, if it's an animal.
Uh-huh.
Two presenters with tremendous in-depth knowledge on this, historically, we have a lot of health issues now that didn't used to exist, or were very rare. Heart attacks and strokes, autism, and attention deficit disorder, all nature of things are modern diseases. And this presentation drove the point home that our diet of 150 years ago was very strong on omega-3 fatty acids and low on omega-6. And we've shifted that ratio something like 15 times heavier towards omega-6. And that's coming from eating processed food. It's coming from shifting to a grain diet. And when it's meat or eggs, those animals are being fed a grain, and the grain is high in omega-6. And you only need a balance between it. Omega-6 are not something you have to avoid. It's just that we've driven the thing crazy over onto the omega-6 side.
Yeah. So when I hear the term grain, though, so let's, you know, we've got some chickens. A lot of people around here have chickens.
Yes.
And other forms of fowl.
Yeah.
So they're eating grain. But what about if you're, you know, you're going and buying a good loaf of bread from, you know, a local baker, or you're making your own bread with whole wheat flour and stuff? Are those containing more omega-6s than you should have because they're a grain?
Or? So the magic is that when you sprout a grain, it turns from omega-6 to omega-3.
Oh, that is news to me.
Yes.
Wow. The transition.
It transists. And when you feed your chickens corn, as we did, cracked corn and barley and things like that, the eggs have a lot of omega-6 fatty acids in them, not much 3. You sprout those things and feed them, or let them forage on the bugs and the worms in the yard, and you're into an egg with lots of omega-3s in them.
Sounds like I got to do a little more free-ranging at our place.
Yeah. So in the notes, there will be a synopsis of this in some detail. I don't know if the BioNutrient Association is going to release these presentations or not. It was a pay to go and be part of it. There's still 15 more of these sessions. And I think the BioNutrient Association is looking at this and saying, you know, we've been measuring the nutrient density of food based on mineral content and anti-inflammatories and things like that. And they, I think, are going to move to looking at ways to try to measure the amount of omega-3 and omega-6 fatty acids in foods, maybe with your cell phone. They say if they can get the cell phone manufacturers on board, they can do that.
Wow, another tool in the pocket cell phone.
Yes, there's also information if you care about growing food for the market, meat and poultry and so forth for the market. There's information on there on how to get tenderer meat and have high omega-3s in them. So
it makes me think of a story that we're going to get to. I know that we were talking about the new sort of resiliency solar array that will be, it's going to take a little while, going up over in the Rochester, Brandon area. And Henry has been in touch with Norwich Solar's Jim Miriam. And I think later on in the summer, Jim will be joining us to talk about that. But it is slated to be on a property owned by North Hollow Farms, which is primarily known for its grass-fed beef. And those cows will continue to graze on that grass-fed while they're underneath the solar panels. So an interesting combination there. Keep your omega-3s if indeed you need to keep meat in your diet. And also know that they're getting a little shade from the solar panels.
So the first presenter at this conference was Ken Hamilton. And he runs he started off doing a farm, but he did a presentation that was worthy of a historical nutritionist. It was just incredible how much information he had. And the second person that joined in was John Umha, who is used to work for the National Institute of Health, working on what happens to the brain when you have alcohol disorder. And he said it's all about omega-3 and omega-6 fatty acids.
Okay.
And Ken Hamilton says one of the reasons we don't tend to go after grass-fed beef is that it tends to be slower growing. And it's slower growing. Anything that is tender has grown fast. And a slower growing beef is not as tender. And maybe not as flavorful either. It certainly doesn't have that richness, although some of that richness is just the nasties from corn.
Right.
But if you ferment that food, if you ensile that food, especially for finishing the animal, you actually get the rate of gains you get out of the feedlot. You do it much cheaper, and it is just as tender as the very top grades out of the feedlot. So that puts it ahead, and he's attempting to move commercial farmers over to that system and have them pay him so much ahead they get a chance to say to sell very high quality beef at a big profit margin to them. And he's been working for 15 years gathering this information and developing these systems.
Wow.
It's in the notes.
Yeah, it's in the notes. And I'll just put in one more plug for vegetarianism. our guest there a couple weeks ago did emphasize, and I forget, what's the name of the tool that you had that can actually measure the amount of key minerals and vitamins
that's a refractometer.
And
most sugar makers, I actually own one because it's the way we measure sap, and I always thought of it as sugar only, but it measures all the dissolved solids.
Interesting, yeah. So a refractometer coming to a library near you soon. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, Henry, go ahead. One more thing, and then it's about time to make that phone call. Yeah.
$20 for a refractometer if you go on the web and look for a cheapie.
I'm going to put some music on while Henry makes this call, and we will be right back here on Green Zine. And this one is from the Kinks, and we have a story about gas coming up. If I can find, where did that go? Yeah, This is based on a story of releasing more barrels of gas from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve by President Biden.
I've been waiting for years to buy a brand new Cadillac. But now that I've got one, I want to send it right back. I can't afford the gas for my luxury limousine. But even if I had the dough, no one's got no gasoline. I went to my local dealer to see if he could set me straight. He said there's a little gas going, but you have to wait. But they offer some red hot speed and some really high grade hats.
There we go, a gallon of gas from the Kinks. Yeah, well, I think a gallon of gas will be available. The official or unofficial summer season of travel starts off this weekend, Memorial Day weekend, and the Biden administration is releasing 1 million barrels of gas from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve, most of that coming from New Jersey and Maine. They will be allocated in increments of 100,000 barrels at a time. Now, whether you think this is a good idea or a bad idea, as we try to transition away from fossil fuels in our transportation sector, I know what my opinion is on it. But the Energy Department said the sale of 1 million barrels, about 42 million gallons, was provided time to provide relief for motorists as the summer driving season begins. Current prices of gas are around $3.60 a gallon nationwide, up 6 cents from a year ago. Now, some of you may remember when we were tipping up towards $5. And guess what? People started to drive less or think about other ways to provide their transportation. So not sure that that continuing move going into the summer is more of an economic reason or possibly a political reason. Well, right now we're going to try to tie back in with my colleague Henry and our guest today. There you go.
Hi there. So we have Griffin Sinclair Wingate from a summer of heat program. Sorry about that. Let's switch over. See you.
There we are.
Yeah, it's going to have a little echo effect with you using that phone, Henry, so we'll have to deal with that. Henry's trying to figure out how to mute the echo.
Yeah. Does that help at all?
I think that if our caller calls the studio line directly, that we can speak to him that way.
Yeah. Griffin, could you do that?
Yeah, I can do that. What's the studio line number?
So it's
702-763-2700, Griffin. And when the light lights up, we'll put you right back in the system.
So did you get that number, Griffin?
802-763-2700.
You got it.
All right.
We'll wait for your call. Right.
Okay,
we'll knock that out of the system. Yeah, that might take people into a different cosmic phase if we kept that one going, Henry. But yeah. We'll pick him up. Hey, there he is. He's coming in right now. We're just going to hit this, and we will carry on. Let's see if that works. All right. Griffin, are you back with us?
Hey, I am. Can you all hear me all right?
Much better, yeah. Glad to have
that
you.
We did that in an unusual way, and it didn't work.
But it's
No worries.
It's working now, so let's plunge in.
Okay, awesome. So tell us about the Summer of Heat, and maybe before that, just a little bit about who you are.
Sure thing. First things first, thank you so much for having me. My name is Griffin, and I am the campaign manager with Climate Defenders. And one of our main projects has been this thing we're calling Summer of Heat. Basically, right, we all know to stop the climate crisis, we have to end fossil fuels. Fossil fuel companies, just like any other company, they're not going to survive without access to capital. So to speak, businesses need money to be able to function, to be able to grow. Summer of Heat is a sustained campaign of civil disobedience targeting those institutions that are funding the fossil fuel industry and allow it to continue to expand. So what does that mean? It means that we are targeting the banks that give loans to Exxon to build new pipelines, private equity funds that are investing hundreds of billions of dollars in coal, oil, and gas companies, and insurance companies that are providing coverage to fossil fuel companies. At the same time, they're revoking coverage to families that live in the pathway of climate destruction. So what does that look like? What actually is Summer of Heat? Right, I mentioned it is a sustained campaign of civil disobedience that is taking place on Wall Street this summer. We are going to be shutting down the headquarters of these financial institutions that allow coal, oil, and gas companies to expand. We're going to be visiting the penthouses and the vacation homes of the CEOs who wake up every morning and choose to make profits for a wealthy few over a livable planet for all of us.
I love it.
So that in a nutshell, is what Summer of Heat is.
It sounds like people are willing to maybe go to jail for this. I can imagine if you went out to the Hamptons on Long Island, where I imagine some of those CEOs might have a summer home, and you were to troop up the beach to their door, that you might encounter a little resistance. So I'm all for you there, Griffin.
We actually have a whole week scheduled where we'll be taking a trip up to the Hamptons.
Yeah, I figure that might be a spot that you go to.
So have you and you're offering training for this? You're actually taking the uninitiated and initiating us. Am I right about that?
Yes. Yeah. You know, in order to pull this off, we're going to need thousands and thousands of people. And more, you know, folks are feeling the effects of the climate crisis in their everyday lives. You know, we all remember last summer when the skies turned orange in New York. For me personally, the climate crisis moment that sticks out to me the most from last summer was when this huge rainstorm hit the seacoast of New Hampshire. That's where I grew up. Mm. And I remember seeing these videos, this like BBC live footage of like the places I used to hang out as a kid, the place I used to go up to school, where I had my first date. And they're just absolutely flooded. They're decimated. And the businesses are destroyed. Family homes are destroyed. My point here, more and more people are feeling the effects of the climate crisis and they want to do something about it. And signing petitions online just doesn't feel like we're actually going to make a dent in this monumental problem. And so part of the idea of the summer is to offer up something with a little bit more bite. It's a bigger ask to come to New York and take action with us this summer. But, I think it matches kind of some of the scale of what we need to be doing to address a problem of this magnitude.
Yeah, I think that we are not winning the battle against big oil as we currently stand. U.S. producing more oil in the last year than it has in any other year. yes, we're getting on to some green energy, but we sure aren't removing the burning of fossil fuel nearly fast enough. And I think that, as Todd said in his comment, that the price of gasoline and if the strategic oil reserves weren't releasing that gas, maybe we would see some $5 gasoline cost. And people do drop back their usage when the price is high. And I'd love to see the price go to what the real environmental cost of burning a gallon of gasoline is. And I think choking off the money supply will help to drive that price up.
Hey, Griffin, a couple quick questions. And definitely psyched to hear about the progress when you all go down to Wall Street and make trips to the CEOs' houses, et cetera. Where are you hoping to recruit most of, as you say, thousands of volunteers? And then secondly, I would imagine that having a connection to the media, obviously New York City is a major media capital, so that the coverage of these very nonviolent civil disobedient actions really reaches the widest possible audience. I imagine you might even have a special subcommittee dealing with the media.
Yes. So we have a bunch of different working groups set up that people are welcome to engage in. We have a logistics team. We have different organizing teams focusing week by week on different actions. We do have a communications team. We have a digital team. And, you know, all of those teams are mixed with some people who are helping, who work at these organizations that are helping put on Summer of Heat. And then it's also people who are, you know, just everyday people who are coming to a call after work or helping out in their spare time. Students are a large part of the people who are helping put this thing on.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in terms of where the people are coming from that you asked about, you know, obviously New York is going to be where all our actions are taking place this summer. We're going to be pulling really heavily from that area. But as someone who grew up in New Hampshire and someone who now lives in Maine, I really want to see, you know, my friends and family from the upper New England region turning out. And our hope is that we can turn people out from all over New England to come to these actions and join us for, you know, a day or a couple of days or a week or even a month. We have some people who are joining us for, you know, they're giving their whole summer. So I think, you know, people can come from all different walks of life and all different, you know, corners of the woods, if you will, to take part in these actions.
So people from Vermont, what action can we take? I mean, we certainly we flooded our capital twice this last summer, you know, and did lots more damage with those flood events that were probably the same ones that got to you down on the New Hampshire coast. But tell us what are the best ways for us to get involved in whether we're going to actually physically join in on your civil disobedience, or whether there's anything we can do remotely as well if we don't have the ability to take our bodies to New York area?
Sure thing. So the easiest thing, the first place to start, check out our website, summerofheat.org. We have calls happening every week, really, where you can get kind of onboarded, get the lowdown, more info on Summer of Heat and what the specific actions are looking like. So that'd be a great place to start. We're asking folks who are interested in coming to New York to be crew captains, to put together a group of five or more folks to come down for couple days or a week or whatever and join us in taking action. And I know some really incredible grassroots groups up there in Vermont, like 350 Vermont and Rights and Democracy. And, you know, I'm hoping that those groups might send some folks down, but I'd really encourage people to get involved with those crews. I'd just encourage people to sign up online with us. We have a really extensive follow-up program. You sign up online, you're going to be hearing from us about the best ways to get involved that match your situation, whether that's coming to New York and throwing down for an action, or maybe just helping out with a phone bank or a text bank from your couch at home.
Oh, there you go.
There.
Way to do it from home.
That's territory. I carry a Citibank credit card in my wallet, and it's the credit card I use the most because it gets me into a store I use when I can't get in there without it. And I'm going to write a letter to them and tell them that your credit card is a credit card I use all the time, and I'm going to stop charging anything on it because of your funding the fossil fuel industry.
That's a big sacrifice.
Just out of curiosity, you mentioned you need to use it to get into a store. Is it a Costco?
It's Costco.
Credit card?
Yeah.
It's Costco. Well, so interesting thing about this. Costco is one of Citibank's largest credit card clients. Citibank makes huge amounts of money off that.
So I should go after Costco.
Well, there are some efforts happening right now to say, hey, Costco, you know, we like you and everything, but we think you're in bed with this really nasty credit card company, and there's just better options out there. Why don't you ditch your relationship with Citi and go find another credit card provider who isn't, you know, one of the largest investors in fossil fuels in the world.
Get Costco to put pressure on Citi to stop funding oil.
Exactly. And two other quick things on this. One, I don't think you do need to use your Costco branded credit card at Costco. I think you can use any credit card you want.
Oh, you can.
And two, yeah.
When I buy gas, I get a discount that I wouldn't get on another credit card.
You're torn, Henry. Got torn. It.
But I'm going to jump in there. All right. I'll lose the discount.
I hear you, Henry. I'm also chasing the points like anyone else. But I think zooming out here for a second, it's important to name that it's not about whether you decide to use your Citi credit card or you decide to cut it up. It's about where Citibank puts its money. Yeah. You know, we can make all these kinds of small individual actions, and those are great. But really, at the end of the day, it's about whether or not Citi is going to continue to invest hundreds of billions of dollars in fossil fuel expansion, or if they're going to do the right thing and stop funding fossil fuels.
Right. All right. So give us that website one more time.
It is summerofheat.org.
Summerofheat.org. We'll put that in our notes so people can find it if they can't remember that. It's a pretty simple one.
Yeah.
So thank you so much for that work. And yes, Vermont 350. I see messages from Bill McKibben that his third act, he's encouraging people to be involved in the Summer of Heat campaign. And it's right up his alley. That's where 350 got started, was trying to shut down the money for fossil fuel.
Yeah, and one quick thought, Griffin, before we let you go, and that would be, as this transpires, there may be a Thursday at around this time between 11 a.m. and 12 where there is an action going on by the Summer of Heat crew. And if you stay in touch with Henry, maybe we'll speak with some folks that are directly taking the heat, whether it's out at the Hamptons or down on Wall Street.
Yeah, that would be fun.
I think that would be interesting radio. Okay, so we'll follow up on that. Thank you very much, though, Griffin, for giving us all this great information.
Excellent. Thanks so much for having me. Have a great rest of your day.
All right, you too.
Right. Bye-bye.
All right, bye. Okay, Henry, yeah, that was a last-minute grab there of Griffin, though. He sounds like he's fired up. So go to that website if you have a chance. Hey, you are listening to Green Zine. We're going to take care of a little bit of business, and then we do have a little bit more information to get out to you. It's 5 minutes before the top of the hour, and we bring you Democracy Now! Monday through Friday at noon with Amy Goodman. I will start with acknowledging our underwriters that have kept this show on the air for more than 10 years. And Green Zine is brought to you today by Soliflect, also by Bale, Royal Trailworks, Daniel Leibowitz, the Upper Pass Beer Company, First Branch Coffee Company, Solar Fest, and the White River Land Collaborative. We broadcast from, as I like to say, high atop Magic Mountain on the campus of the Vermont Law and Graduate School, and we appreciate their support. And I am looking at a website. I'm going to move my mic just a little bit. I was talking to one of our former board members, Maureen Moriarty, and she was able to get this dialed up, and also another former person who used to do a show here, Courtney Collins, has put together a great series. This is the Hot Topics in Environmental Law, and it's kicking off officially on Tuesday, June 4th. And the programs go every Tuesday and Thursday for a good part of the summer. So it's starting on June 4th, and I will scroll down to the last date. I think it's going to go until August the 1st. And there are many different topics, and this is available online. In fact, this will be an online only. When they first started, they would have a live lecture over at Oaks Hall. So, for instance, on June 4th, Christine Rowe, who is a freelance journalist and a VLGS Animal Law Media Fellow, will be giving a program called Do Animals Get Bored? Does It Matter? The following Thursday, June 6th, Mavis Gregg of AirShares and VLGS Sustainable Ag and Food Systems Scholar will be speaking. And I'll give you one more, speaking of activism, Alex Barron from Smith College, speaking about transforming college operations for climate justice. All those programs can be found at the VLGS website, and just put in Hot Topics in Environmental Law. Back to you, Henry.
Yes, so I want to put a plug in for the Climate Cabinet, climatecabinet.org. And I heard about them on Volts. They're the newest podcast of Volts is called A Moneyball Approach to Elect People. And as I mentioned at the beginning of the program, the concept here is that a lot of the decisions that bring on or prevent clean energy from going on the grid is done at very local level. And if we can elect the right people to those positions, then we land up with much better move to so they looked at previous actions they've taken, and they work with individual people and individual candidates for roles. And it can even be some states, the Public Service Board is elected by the people instead of appointed by the governor, wow, as it is in Vermont. And you get the right people on that board. They said they went through and they looked at all the places where there were solar projects that had gone in, and the biggest number was in Massachusetts, and the state of Arizona, which has sun 24/7,
even at night, wow,
had zero projects. And it's all about politics and about who's sitting in those decision-making chairs. And so you can join Climate Cabinet, and you can help them with telephone campaigns. I think we have a lot of good people in Vermont already. I don't think our local politics, we can always make improvements.
But real quick on that, and this may be a little tie-in, there will be almost a record amount of Senate seats opening up this year. 5 out of 30 Senate seats are either through retirement or moving on, and that's a way to use climate change and environment and question these candidates that are going to run for those seats.
Yes.
Hey, this is Ben Greenzine here at WFVR-LP, South Royalton, Vermont. Stay tuned for Democracy Now! Henry, always great to have you back in the studio.
Yes, fun to be here.
All right, we'll see you next week, folks.